Hello, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, the unfiltered and unmasked podcast about everything autism. Here's your host, Devin Morrissey.
Hi, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic with me, Devin Morrissey. I want to officially welcome you all to episode 17, where today I will be interviewing our next guest. My next guest is a supporting cast member on the inaugural first two seasons of the U.S. version of Love on the Spectrum. In addition, she is the co-creator and co-host of the YouTube series The Spirit Keepers, and she is here to discuss some spiritual encounters that she has had. Please welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, Emma Hodgson.
Hey, Devin. It's so good to see you. I'm so happy to be here, especially after meeting in person. Like, I can't wait to chat more and everything and get to know you more. So I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, the pleasure is mine. And for those of you that heard it right, yes, we just met in person about a few weeks ago, actually, because James had come into town before back in February. And this time he had so much fun that he brought Emma and Maggie down with him. And yeah, it was a wonderful get together for all of us that were on the show. And Emma and I met and I'm like, you know what? You should come on the podcast and talk about your experience, because us supporting cast members have a lot to bond over that.
Yeah, definitely. The moment you brought that up, I'm like, yeah, let's chat more. We need to connect a little bit more on this for sure.
I love it. So the first question I have for you, Emma, is when were you first diagnosed autistic? When did you find out that you were autistic, and what was your reaction?
Yeah, so my journey with like learning about my diagnosis, it's pretty interesting, because I was diagnosed when I was 4 years old, and I'm 31. So that was back in like 1997. And I initially was diagnosed with Asperger's. Obviously, we don't use like that terminology anymore, but that's, you know, what it was called at the time. And it's interesting because I was diagnosed then, but I didn't actually have like a sit down conversation with my parents about it until I was 14. So there was a little bit of a time jump with when I actually learned about my diagnosis and what that meant. I always knew I was different as a kid. You know, when I like first went into elementary school, I had an IEP, and I definitely had learning differences for sure. But it wasn't until middle school where it kind of started to like negatively impact me. So because around that time, I feel like in elementary school, like even if you're different, everyone kind of hangs out with one another. Yep. And everyone, you know, everyone's kind of friends with everyone, and everyone's kind of included in things. And it wasn't until middle school that like I started like developing anxiety and depression and things like that. And I think it was because once you hit like middle school, that's when friend groups become a little bit more exclusive and things like that. And it made me realize that a lot of people who I thought were my friends, like, may not have been saying like very nice things behind my back and like things like that. So I kind of went through a period around that time where I kind of became more depressed and anxious, and I started masking a lot. And like just kind of like trying to see what other people are doing and seeing like what I could do to be more likable, you know, things like that. So I was actually going through kind of a rough patch when I first learned about it, because I didn't have a problem with being different. It was more of just the feeling of like being alone that like really got to me. And so I got like diagnosed with anxiety during that time. I definitely was like feeling pretty sad and bad during that time, but I think it was more just the feeling of being alone. And my parents ended up telling me when I was around 14 years old about it. And my mom, so once again, just a reminder, this is like 2007 when this happened. So it's like 1997 to 2007. So things were very different. It was a very different time to be on the spectrum. Yeah. And my mom said, she was like, the reason we waited to tell you is we didn't want you to feel like you were incapable or unable to do the things that you wanted to do in life. And there was such a negative stigma around it at the time. And like things have gotten so much better. Like we're now starting to like lift people on the spectrum up and like embrace our unique differences and all that kind of stuff. But at the time, like that wasn't happening as much. It just was kind of something that no one was really talking about. There was like little to no representation in the media, things like that. So I think that also was like part of it too. It's just my mom didn't want me to see it as like a negative thing or that, or like be afraid to like dream because I was on the spectrum and, you know, things like that. And I actually had a really positive response to it.
In a way, we both have kind of similar experiences in terms of both battling with PTSD, both battling with anxiety, battling with depression. And, you know, you're right. It's amazing of just how much the perception of autism now has changed compared to where it was in 2007 or 1997, for that matter, because we're literally both the same age. We're both 31, so we're both 93 babies.
Yeah,
so...
93 babies. You're of the rooster if you follow like the Chinese zodiac. Yeah, so it was actually a very positive thing for me to learn about my diagnosis, just because, like I said, it wasn't so much the fact that I was different that was like upsetting me. It was just kind of like me feeling alone and like I was the only person going through this that like really, really was like kind of causing me a spiral. And then when I learned that, I was like, oh, there's a name for this, you know, there's a label. And it made me realize kind of that, you know, like I can get through this too. Like other people, like there's a whole community of people out there who go through the same thing. And like, as long as I knew that, I just feel like I was able to, I could get through anything. So I went into high school and, you know, there was still some, a little bit of like, you know, bullying going on and like not so nice things, but I was able to develop more of a friend group in high school. And like, it wasn't a huge friend group. I'm not like, no, I've never been like winning any like popularity contests or anything like that, but I at least had like a good support system, you know? And I was able to kind of like make my way through everything that way. But yeah, it was actually a really positive experience for me learning about my diagnosis. I was relieved.
Yes. And something that you brought up that I just so resonated was the fact that you thought you were the only one that was living with autism. I think that so many people out there can really vouch for that, because with all of maybe not understanding the social cues or not understanding the social interactions, what people are saying behind our back, it just kind of has this warfare that we develop the word. It's like, wait, why is everyone talking about me? Why is everyone looking at me a certain way? And, you know, I think that it's absolutely incredible that you were able to open up about this, because for so many years, I thought, just like you, I was the only one that was autistic. But then being around other autistic people that basically deal with the same stuff, it's like, oh, this is actually nice. There's other people around that actually get me where I'm coming from, literally.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I think that's, it's so important to really find that nick of people that also support you and that lift you up. Because obviously high school and middle school, those times are never easy. And especially,
they're gnarly.
Yes, and especially for people on the spectrum, it can be even harder. It can be even more difficult. What I think your story growing up has really exemplified is that autism is a journey. And it takes a while, because I was in that same boat as you. I was diagnosed at the age of 3. I literally found out when I was 12 years old, about to head off into middle school. And I just looked at my parents and I'm just like, wait, what? And I literally gave them that look because it was so shocking. But as you get older and you begin to feel more confident in yourself, that's when you just allow yourself to feel good about your uniqueness and your abilities. Your uniqueness and your abilities definitely shined in a little TV show that we both had the opportunity to get a part of. But we're actually going to hold off on that just for a second, because during the COVID lockdown back in 2020, you and your friend Siobhan actually launched a YouTube series called The Spirit Keepers. Now, it revolves around, quote, paranormal investigating, paranormal story times, exploration and discussion of spooky cases. What got you started on the Spirit Keepers, and what ignited your hobby on the discovery of spirits?
Yeah, so we're getting into the special interests, so be ready. But so I think I'm going to start out with like how I started getting into the paranormal, because that was back when I was like 8 or 9 years old. I remember, so I used to think that like when during Halloween, you know, when like people would dress up as ghosts and stuff, like when I was a kid, I thought that I put like ghosts in kind of the same category as like werewolves or vampires, where it's just kind of like a thing that like is in horror movies and like comes around during Halloween, but like isn't real. But what I have ended up finding out when I was 8 that like ghosts were real. And I remember we had a class during the day at school for library. You know, you would like go and like the librarian would like read a book and they'd like
yes.
let you pick a book for the all that kind of stuff. And she did a reading. So I was raised in Saratoga Springs, New York. It's, for people who don't know, it's like 45 minutes north of Albany. So it's kind of like the capital region of upstate. There is a book that came out called Saratoga County Ghosts. And it was literally just about like a bunch of different ghost stories from like all over the area. And it was written by one of the history teachers, I think either at our like middle school or high school. He retired and then like wrote this book about like paranormal stuff in the area. And the librarian started reading that during our class. And I remember being like so confused. I'm like, wait, there's like real ghost stories? Like, I remember being so thrown off by that. And then like, and my friend was like, oh yeah, that's like a real thing. And she like, I was like, what do you mean that's a real thing? And then she had to like explain to me. She was like, oh yeah, like this is something that like a lot of people have like reported and experienced, where like it's supposed to be like, you know, people who have died, like, you know, like coming, like still being here. And like, there's all this like phenomenon connected to it. And I was like, mind blown, like immediately. And it's funny, because like, I talk about that story. And I always think of like, have you ever played like Zelda, The Ocarina of Time?
How could I not have played?
I was about to say, I'm like, you are like a millennial. But yeah, so it's so funny. I always tell that story, and I always like imagine like Link, like young Link, going into like the treasure chest box and like getting an item and being like, "You've unlocked a special."
Yes. I'm so dork. Okay, come on. We're all dorks. I mean, how have you not played Zelda or Young Link back in the day? Come on.
Yeah. It just cracks me up, because that's like the image I think of like when I tell that story. But anyway, so that's kind of like what started everything. And then I started having paranormal experiences in my house growing up, like a few years after this. And like, it was a lot of like poltergeist activity. So like, for those of you who don't know, like a poltergeist, it's a German word for like noisy ghosts. So like poltergeists, I won't get into like everything that happened ever, but like they have a tendency to like haunt people using like noise and movement. So like, for example, like you might hear someone talking, you know, or something like in a house, or like it could be like they move things around, or like you'll know you put something somewhere, it'll disappear, and then like you'll find it in like a totally random spot, and like, you know, doors opening and shutting, hearing footsteps, things like that. So there were a few years where I was like experiencing paranormal activity in my house, which like also, you know, caused me to look into ghost hunting more. As for like the YouTube channel, so Siobhan and I started doing like a little bit of ghost hunting on our own, when I was in college. And so I went to school in like North Adams, Massachusetts, and like, which is like in the Berkshires. So it's like Western Massachusetts. That's like a mountain range that's out there. So it's a little bit more rural, just for like people who aren't familiar with the area. But there is a haunted place called the Hoosic Tunnel. And once again, I'll try not to like get too much into it, but it's just a really haunted train tunnel. And we started doing some investigating there. And I was like, you know what? Like, wouldn't it be cool if we actually recorded like when we ghost hunt, just for like documentation reasons, you know, instead of like telling people about our like ghost stories or whatever, like, wouldn't it be cool to be able to like show people, you know, even if it doesn't get like a huge audience or like anything like that, just to have like the documentation of the cool stuff that's happening. So the pandemic hits, I end up like going, so Siobhan lives in upstate New York as well. Well, she still lives in upstate New York. I live in the Boston area now, but I went home during the pandemic. Just because with the quarantine and everything, and you know, it was such scary times.
Especially in a big city like Boston as well. You were like, I need to get out.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, especially with the stuff going on in New York, you know, I mean, all any city, it wasn't great, but especially like New York City. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So I went home, and I saw Siobhan a lot while I was home. And I had a feeling that I was going to get laid off from my job, like most people were. And I told Siobhan, I was like, we've talked about this before and like doing a YouTube channel just to like document our paranormal experiences. And I told her, I'm like, if I end up getting laid off, like we should really like do this, you know, and like go see some haunted places in the area and just, you know, just for like fun, you know, during the pandemic. And so I ended up getting laid off, and then we ended up starting the channel. And yeah, I've been, you know, trying to keep up with it. It's hard sometimes just with, you know, life gets in the way, but we still do it. And yeah, I've just been doing it ever since. So that's how the Spirit Keepers was born.
Absolutely. And I love the fact that like you two decided to doing during COVID, and especially since the fact that not a lot of people go looking for spirits. There's a very select few that have the courage and the bravery to do it. And on the bright side too, I mean, since you guys started doing COVID, you guys had a really good reason to social distance from everyone else, because you guys were the only one, I imagine, going through all of these different places looking for spirits. So it was the perfect time to do it. In your latest three-part episode, because you just dropped the third part, you and Siobhan visit the Army Parker House Hotel in Boston, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. You both explore room 303 and learn new information that you didn't know before. What is some information that you and Siobhan learned from room 303 that did not make it into the final videos? Because there's probably had to have been a lot that you and Siobhan had to take in.
Yeah, definitely. So there's definitely some stuff, a couple of things that I actually didn't learn until very recently, that gave me like a lot of perspective on what went down in like those three videos. So in particular with the room 303, obviously you guys, if you watched that part two of the Omni Parker House, we realized that the original like haunted room 303 is actually not where, like, they changed up the numbering for the rooms. So that was the thing you learned during the video. So what we thought was the haunted room actually wasn't, and that we found out it was, they made a storage space, but like they changed the numbering on stuff, so it wasn't in the same spot. One thing that I learned recently on the Boston ghost tour was that apparently, like, in regards to the Stephen King stuff, he did still allegedly like stay there, and he did use like the hotel to inspire room 1408, like allegedly. But they said that he stayed, once again, allegedly stayed in a room that was adjacent to the storage room. So I guess at the time when Stephen King was supposedly there, they had already changed the numbering on the room. So he was able to get, so he was able to stay there, but he wasn't directly like in that room. So that's like an important thing to know that we learned. And then another thing, it's interesting because another thing that I learned afterwards that makes part of part two of that series make sense is, if you watch that video, like the second half, We are over by like the Charles Dickens mirror. That is this like really supposedly like haunted mirror that's out in the mezzanine level. Really spooky, really creepy. So Siobhan, like when we were doing that like little part of the investigation, she was sitting on a chair that's like kind of near the mirror. It's not the ones like directly next to it, but there was like another table where like we kind of debunked some stuff because it looked like the mirror was like not the mirror, the flashlight was shaking, all that stuff. So when she is sitting in that chair, we get like what's called an EVP, which stands for electronic voice phenomenon. We got one of those on the camera where you hear something say, please sit, if you like listen close enough. And we're like, right, she's sitting in the chair and I'm like right next to it. And I learned later that there is actually a famous ghost story that is connected to like the chair, well, the chair that Siobhan was sitting in that they tell on the ghost tour.
Whoa.
That I didn't know about. Like I just learned it from like the ghost tour. So I think it was very like on the DL. So it was pretty wild, but pretty much to give you like a shorter version of it. So like Harvey Parker, he was the original owner of the hotel, and he is one of like the most famous ghosts that like haunts the hotel. And apparently, so the mezzanine level is where if you go to the restaurant there, that's where you would also go to use the bathrooms and stuff. And apparently there was a guest staying there who like went to use the bathroom, and on the way like struck up a conversation with a guy who was sitting in Siobhan's chair. And so he was talking to him about the hotel and stuff. And pretty much what happened was he made some kind of joke about the hotel, and like the guy who's sitting in the chair, he says, well, you're not the one whose name is on the sign for the hotel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, and of course the guy figured it out, because like there's a photo of Harvey Parker in like the lobby in the restaurant area. So, and I think it like hit him all at once, like, oh my God, like I'm like, this is Harvey Parker. So he turns around and he starts going to the bathroom, and the guy sitting on the chair that obviously we're assuming is Harvey Parker, he says, he was like, don't you want to know what my name is? And he was like, I'm good. Like, I think he says something like that and just like leaves and like goes to the bathroom. And then when he came back, he was gone. But like, that's one of like the bigger stories with Harvey Parker, because he tends to like not only come like show himself as like a full body apparition, but also like he like talks to people. Like, there's a lot of like experiences where like he's like chatting with like kids and stuff. So it's interesting like seeing that video now where there's like the EVP that says, please sit, because it almost makes me wonder. I'm like, was that Harvey Parker like talking, you know what I mean? Like talking to us, or is it not? You know, it's all speculation, but I was like, that gives that like a lot of, you know, it gives that whole incident like a lot more meaning. So that was a pretty cool thing I learned recently, but.
That is wild. It's so wild. And I just love the fact that he's like, do you realize where you're staying? Do you see whose name is up on the hotel?
Yeah, he's a shade factory. Oh my God. I'm like, I love a good ghost that likes to have fun with it, you know? Like,
oh my goodness. A shady ghost. I am 100% here for it. And I'm actually kind of curious now to check this hotel out for myself, because it definitely sounds like there's a lot of suspicious stuff that is happening over there. Like,
yeah,
it sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool little hotel for sure. And like I said, like a lot of the stuff on the ghost tour was new information for me that like I couldn't even find online. So like there's a lot, like even just looking at the history of that place, there is a lot going on. So yeah.
It's wild too, because also the stuff that they don't have online, because you can find so much stuff online these days, but the stuff that you don't find online, it's almost like they try to keep it hidden away from you for a reason. It's
yeah.
Awesome. So shifting gears, and I think everyone at this point knows where we're going to go in this conversation. Love on the Spectrum is an Australian reality TV show surrounding the lives of autistic individuals as they encounter love, dating, relationships, you name it. It premiered on Netflix in November 2019. It's wild to think that it's almost been 5 years now. And did you get a chance to watch the original Love on the Spectrum in Australia? If so, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, so I was very aware of the original Love on the Spectrum in Australia. And I remember the first time ever seeing it come up on my Netflix page, because like, obviously, at this point, they had like, finally taken over for like ABC Australia with the rights and stuff. But yeah, so I couldn't believe it. And I was like, this is amazing. I just remember like just taking the time to like watch this and realize like how groundbreaking this was. Yeah. And like I had a lot of family and friends who aren't on the spectrum like watch that show. And it's interesting because like they said that the awesome thing about Love on the Spectrum is I also think that people who aren't on the spectrum can watch it, and like they're also learning stuff about themselves as well as like, you know, educating themselves, because you know, there were a lot of people who watched it and they were like, I kind of, you know, it got to the point where I felt like I was just watching like a typical dating show. I wasn't even thinking about the like spectrum element of it, and it's just so great to just kind of have a show come out that shows, you know, everyone that we really aren't that different. Like once you take the time to get to know us, you know, and I knew it was going to be a pretty successful show because I don't think anyone had seen anything like it at the time. And it's just also interesting too, because I'm pretty close friends now with specifically Ryan from the original.
Shout out to Ryan.
I remember listening to your episode with him earlier on, but it's just so cool to like look back at that and be like, because I never would have thought that, you know, I would like watch the show and like I'd see someone on it that would be like a close friend, you know what I mean? So yeah, and the cast is like so wonderful and so lovable, all of them. And I think they just did a really good job setting everything up with that first show. And yeah. I always tell people, like so much respect for that first show, because we wouldn't be where we are now, you know, like if it wasn't for that first show. So I like when things happen, like we get recognized for things, or, you know, there's like awards or whatever, I always say like, it's just as much of a win for them as it is for us, because we wouldn't be here without that original series. So much respect to them for sure.
You hit the nail on the head, because I was thinking about this when we were all together in LA. We would not be here if it weren't for the original Australian cast that helped put the show on the map. We would not be here without Jimmy and Sharnay. We would not be here without Chloe. We would not be here without Mark and Ryan. We would not be here without Olivia. We would definitely not be here without Kelvin. And we would not be here without Mr. A-plus himself, Michael. Because even though the US version has taken off in many ways, people forget sometimes that the show actually originated in Australia. And the original cast, I feel like, deserves their flowers. Well-deserved flowers that they... And also was the Australian version was incredible as well. Like Teo and Jaden and everybody, they helped put this show on the map. So a lot of us, actually all of us, would not be here if it wasn't for them. And I just hope that anyone that's on the Australian cast of that show, I hope that you know that all of the US cast, whether it were main, supporting, or just making cameo appearances, we thank you guys for really putting this show on the map and for making that a reality for all of us to follow in your footsteps, because they set the bar high. Set the bar high for us. So after two seasons in Australia and a massive audience reaction around the world, Netflix and Northern Pictures decided to bring Love on the Spectrum to the United States. And you were actually one of the first supporting cast members to help launch the US version of the show. I love talking to a fellow supporting cast member of the show. It's amazing. How were you approached to be on Love on the Spectrum in the United States?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I wasn't formally approached for it. So pretty much what happened was there was just one day I ran. It's so funny because this happened so fast and I remember it so vividly. Like I remember the time, literally like the exact time of the day this all happened. Like I remember the full breakdown of this. So there was one day I was just kind of looking into auditions and things in the area. And I found this website called like auditionsfree.org. And I remember just like scrolling through the website, looking at ads. And at this point, they didn't, like, I don't think they like had officially announced that they were doing Love on the Spectrum US yet. So there was an ad where it just said, we're looking for people who are single, who are on the spectrum or not on the spectrum, but who are open to dating people on the spectrum for a dating show. And I had already seen Love on the Spectrum Australia at this point, and I was like, oh my God, like this is the show, like they're bringing it to the US. And at that point I was like, you know what, like I'm single, I'm on the spectrum, I'm like, the posting had been up for a couple weeks, so I honestly didn't think much of it because I was like, they probably already found someone. You don't really know. So I was like, you know what, I'll send, they asked for a photo. So I sent a photo and then just wrote a short blurb just being like, hi, I'm Emma. You know, I was diagnosed at the age of 4 originally with Asperger's. I am single and I'm open to meeting new people on the spectrum and dating. Because this was also during pandemic times, remember? So like dating wasn't... Yeah, it was like summer of 2021. So it was still like we were slowly coming out of lockdown, but like it still wasn't like that much. Yeah. So I was
they
like,
took extra precautions. They took extra precautions shooting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Bunch of COVID tests.
Oh, yeah. And masks were all on the production while we were shooting. It was ridiculous. Like funny at the same time.
Yeah. So I ended up sending this email out and I remember it was like that, whatever Sunday it was like at 2:30 in the afternoon. Like I said, this happened so quickly and I remember it like so vividly. I remember like the times and stuff too. So I sent it out at 2:30 and I'm like, they're probably not going to get back to me. The posting's been up for a while. And, I'm probably not going to hear anything. So like 4:45, 5 o'clock comes around and they're like, oh, hey, we saw that you sent us this email and we would be interested in meeting with you for the show. Like, when are you available? And me not knowing a single thing about like how production works or pretty much anything works, I was just like, oh my God, this is so overwhelming. Like I need a day or two to like process this. And then, so I was like, well, maybe like, could we do something like, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday? And then they came back and they're like, no, we want to meet tomorrow. I was like, oh, okay.
Yep.
And then, yeah, like I said, I mean, having like no idea, like how anything worked at the time. So I was like, oh, okay. And they're like, when you get out of work? And I was like, around 5 o'clock. And they're like, let's do like a 6 o'clock like interview. And I'm like, okay. Well, so I get out of work and we do this interview. It's like maybe 15 to 20 minutes. They were just trying to like get to know me. And like, they definitely asked some questions to see if like James and I had any like similar interests, things like that. And they said they were like, okay, like we recorded this. We're going to like review it with like the production team. And they said, they're like, if we like decide to go ahead with you, like we'll tell you pretty quickly. So that was at like around 6:20, 6:30. And then I got an email back at like 7:30 being like, being like, hey, we want to you to like meet our guy and stuff. And they were like, are you interested? And I said yes. And then like that whole week was all like, you know, the psychological evaluations and like background checks and stuff. But Yeah, I always tell people, like to tell people like the breakdown of the times and when everything happened, just because it was like literally maybe like 26 and a half hours, like that all went down. So it was
That's
real quick.
wild.
Yeah, it was really wild. But yeah, and then I met James, and you guys all know what went down, and yeah, the rest is history, I
The
guess.
rest is definitely history. That is for sure. I mean,
Yeah.
that's actually interesting. I had no idea that you found this out through a website. That's incredible. And
Yeah.
the fact that you already knew that this was going to be a thing that they were already shooting in the United States. And then to feel that you were a part of something that was so groundbreaking, because I think all of us were not sure how this was going to turn out, given the success of the Australian version. It could have the same success that it had, or it could have maybe had not that great of a success. And
Right.
I think we all know now, just by looking how the show has literally over the last two seasons has just taken off, it's almost like you just sit back, just be like, wow, even just as a supporting cast member, we were a part of something so incredible and something so life-changing for so many people out there. So now, when you visited Los Angeles recently with James and Maggie, I had the most wonderful time getting to have some really fun conversations with
Yeah.
you, such as our past two seasons on the show, because we were both on seasons one and two. But one thing that I did learn about you was so surprising. You have not been on a date since you shot with James for season one. That literally blew my mind. What made you decide to not date for a while after you shot the show?
Yeah, so I think the pandemic like really affected me like more than I expected with dating, because back in 2019 I was like using dating apps and I was going on all like all these dates, and I wasn't that good at making conversations on dating apps, but I was like meeting up with people. There were certain people who weren't into like the whole texting thing either, and were like, do you just want to like go like meet up somewhere or whatever? And I was doing a little bit of dating like before the pandemic, but I don't know what the heck happened. But I like after the pandemic happened and everything, I just there was something about going into dating apps that I started feeling like it was more tedious than like fun. I don't, and like I said, I think like the pandemic and just us everyone being like, we have to stay away from one, like for like safety stuff. I think it's like I still go out now. I'm not saying I'm like always stuck in my room or anything, but I think it kind of like threw off my like drive for dating. And like the thing about the show that was so awesome and that I loved was like, oh great, like production must think I'm like a good fit for this person, and like the fact that they were like setting that up for like the blind date and stuff, I think that was like really helpful. But I think now that like I feel like majority of people are meeting on dating apps, I don't know what it is, but I just feel like it almost feels like a chore to like go through dating apps and stuff. I don't know what happened, but and like why that change happened, but I've just been like cruising and just like do my own thing. But I'm hoping to like get back on the horse at some point for sure. But I think for right now, I was just kind of like okay with doing my own thing, and yeah, but.
But that's good though, because you know yourself well enough to know that you're taking your time, you're enjoying the life. And as you mentioned, the first season of Love on the Spectrum was shot literally as we were coming out of COVID. We
Yeah.
all had to do COVID tests. We all had to take things really seriously in terms of a precaution. And not knowing as well, just what if, let's say, if something happened that one of us caught COVID. It was actually kind of scary. So shooting the second season was a little bit more at ease, even though we had to take the COVID tests again,
Yeah.
even though we still had to be like, hey, we need you to shoot with us in 24 to 48 hours, kind of giving us that heads up. But at the same time, it's exciting to be a part of something that is so monumental, even if it's just for like an episode or two, just knowing that your face is forever plastered and associated with a show that will hopefully open the doors to what life is like for other people, in particular autistic people in this situation. It's an honor to be a part of. And I can feel you about the dating apps. I am not going to lie, I did not look at dating apps until literally COVID. I am not going to lie, I did not look at any dating apps until COVID, and things definitely changed since then, but I am extremely blessed and I wouldn't want it any other way. So both seasons of Love on the Spectrum US premiered to a massive audience reaction and was in the top 10 most watched Netflix television shows for several weeks around the world. What was your reaction to the success of the US version of Lost?
So it was, I thought the show was going to do well, but I don't think I realized the extent to how well it was going to do. So like I always knew that like I said, like if people loved the first series and I'm like, oh, I'm sure they're gonna be all about this too. But when we started getting nominated for Emmys, and like I remember especially for that first season when it was first announced that we got three nominations, I remember tearing up because even though I wasn't like a main participant or anything, like just being a part of the show in general, even like having a smaller part was such a huge honor. And you know, knowing that this is like having a positive impact on, you know, the autism community. And like, I had a lot of people reach out to me when the show first aired. And they would say things like, you know, my son is on the spectrum. And like, they t would tell me, you know, the stories about their kids. And they were like, I see a lot of my son in you and like all that kind of stuff. And, you know, even people who are also on the spectrum reaching out and they're saying like, I really like kind of felt like I related to you on the show, and I kind of felt like I felt seen like through you, you know, because they were like, I feel like we have like similar experiences, and you like remind me a lot of myself in like certain situations and stuff. So I always said, obviously, like I went on the show, I really did want to find love and like, you know, I'll open myself up to meeting new people and you know, finding love. But I also said that if I could impact, you know, people, like even if it was just one person, if one person could be positively impacted by like seeing me on the show, like that kind of, I'm like, at the end of the day, like whether I find love or not, it will have been worth it. So.
Honestly, you couldn't have said it better myself. If one person was impacted by your time on the show, that's all that it matters. And again, the
Yeah.
fact that it's now an Emmy winner as well, and same as you, to be a small part in that for maybe just two, three episodes in both seasons, it was an honor in itself all the way around. And to help
Absolutely.
a friend of mine find love, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything in the world. I wouldn't.
Right.
You know, because you get to say, hey, you kind of helped launch the show in the US while at the same time paying tribute to the people that originated this back in Australia to begin with. For all of us that were on Love on the Spectrum, whether a main cast member or a supporting cast member like you and I, there's no denying that the show has changed all of our lives in different ways. How has Love on the Spectrum changed your life, and how has the show affected you personally?
Yeah, so I think the show has really helped me find my community. So not to like jump back to like those first couple questions, but I've kind of like felt isolated, not only for like learning later about my diagnosis, but I also had a lot, I have always had like neurotypical friends. And James is actually what my first friend who, I mean, maybe there were people I was like closer with when we were younger and like they were on the spectrum and I just didn't realize it. But James was my first friend on the spectrum. And I just thought that, yeah. And I also just want to say in regards to like how season one ended, like, major shout out to James because you know when the everything happened at the end of that season, you know I still wanted to stay friends, but like I also could totally understand him being like, I don't know, like you know if I want to stay friends, you know, because the whole it's kind of you know a like unique situation and like the fact that we didn't like continue romantic, you know. So I think it says a lot about James that he was willing to like maintain a friendship with me after that. So yeah, major shout out to James. But yeah, he was my first friend on the spectrum. And then I've met so many people, like through hanging out with James and like some of like his friends that he's like grown, you know, grown up with and things like that. And like I met Maggie, you know, through him and everything. So I've started to like, I have a lot of friends now who are on the spectrum, and I didn't have that before. And it's one of those things where it's bittersweet because it makes me sad because I feel like I didn't realize what I was missing before. But it's also awesome because now like it kind of shows that like it's never too late to like find your like safe space or like find your people. So it's one of those things where like I look back and I'm like, I wish I had this earlier, but like at least I have it now, you know, kind of thing. So I think that's a major way being a part of the show has positively impacted me for sure.
Better late than never that you find a community that you never even knew that you have. And that really speaks so much volumes that it's better that you found your community through James than never at all. And I think that really speaks so much. So being a fellow supporting cast member, do you get recognized by fans if you're out in public? And if so, what are some funny or fun interactions that you've had with the fans?
Yeah, so I definitely don't get recognized as much as James does, but I do get, I have been recognized a handful of times. It's really funny because James and I talk about this a lot, and he was like, we had to go to Target one day. I think James needed to get like some supplies from home for home or something. And James and I were talking, and he was like, every time I go to Target, I get recognized and all this stuff. And he was like, we're probably going to get recognized today. And we were. But it's also funny because I've also had that happen without James there. So there was one time I was at Target and I was like getting groceries and I was like, not expecting to be seen. I was wearing like sweatpants and like probably like a stained t-shirt or something, you know, like just like, you know, just like very under the radar. And I was in like the checkout line and this girl came up and she was like, oh my God, you're Emma. And like all this stuff and started talking to me about the show and got like a photo and stuff. And it was just so funny because I was like very, very like on the DL, like in like yoga pants and like they found me. But I do have a really funny, so there was one really funny story where I was with my roommate and we, his name is Josh, and we were in the Seaport, which is like, it's an area of Boston, which like, as the name suggests, is like right on Boston Harbor. And we went to Legal Seafood, which is like, I don't know if you guys have any on the West Coast, but we were at this restaurant and I was just on a boat earlier that day. So like, I was just like in a sweatshirt, you know, my hair was frizzy and all sorts of crazy. And it was like 2 weeks after the show had come out. And this little girl, like she was probably 8 or 9 years old. And she came, walks up to the table and she was like, are you Emma from Love on the Spectrum? And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, I am. And it was so cute. And she cracked me up. So she turns to me and she was like, my mom told me that she would give me $10 if I went up and talked to you. And I was like, I was like, great. And I told the girl, I was like, well, tell your mom to pay up. And she cracked up and we talked a little bit and then she walked away.
Oh my gosh, that's brilliant.
Oh, that's one way to get your kids to, you know, do stuff, right?
Oh, I so wish I was there to see that. I am not going to lie. I so wish I was there to see that. That would have been amazing.
Yeah. But that's probably like the funniest encounter I had. But yeah.
That's awesome. Now, Love on the Spectrum has been renewed for a third season, and thousands of individuals have already applied to be on the highly anticipated third season of the show. What tips of advice could you give to those that are looking for love, whether it be in real life or in front of millions on a small screen?
So, in regards to being on the show, I think a big one for being on the show is not to be afraid to like vocalize your needs to production. So one thing that happened when I was on the show was there was one point where I got a little overwhelmed and I let someone know and they said, they're like, oh yeah, we can absolutely take a break if you just like need a second. you know, to like relax or like just take a minute to, you know, collect your thoughts or anything like that. So I think not being, I feel like sometimes people may feel like I can't like say, you know, I can't say that I need like a break or something just due to like production and things like that. And I think the big thing is just, it's okay if like you need a moment or something. Like our, the production team is super, super nice. And I just don't feel like you're letting anyone down by doing that. Like they're very understanding of like, maybe, you know, like needing breaks and like taking your time with something. So that would be my first bit of advice for anyone on the show. I also think that, you know, just being yourself goes a long way. And I know it's sometimes like easier said than done, you know, when you have cameras and everything. But I think, you know, just doing the best you can to like, try to relax, you know, take deep breaths, like use any kind of, you know, relaxing, you know, everyone has their like different self-care things. So if you need to like take some time before shooting to, you know, do some self-care, you know, I'm trying to get back into meditating, you know, just to like help with like my mental health. So just kind of making sure you're taking the time for self-care, but also staying true to yourself and yeah, just vocalizing your needs with production.
100%, 100%. That's great advice right there for new cast members that might be joining the show in season 3. My last questions are, A, what would you like to say to your fans out there? And 2, will we be getting any new The Spirit Keeper episodes coming sooner than later?
The first thing I would like to say is I just want to thank the fans for all of your love and support. I know sometimes I don't always, you know, vocalize it online like all the time, but you really are appreciated. And when people message me and things like that, I do see all of your messages, even if I get caught up with, you know, in the moment with other things. So you are being seen, and I do appreciate all the love and support that you have shown me, as well as our other casts and crew of Love on the Spectrum. So it means the world to me. So thank you all so much. In regards to the Spirit Keepers, this definitely isn't the end. It has been taking me some time to get videos out just due to moving. I recently moved to a new apartment and just like personal family stuff going on, but there's still more coming. The next video we're doing, it's going to be for a haunted location in Vermont called Emily's Bridge. So definitely stay tuned for that. And then there's another video that I recently filmed, and it's about pirate ghosts. So a lot of like the pirate history in like New England goes kind of unseen, just because when people like come to visit, they're mostly focusing on like the American Revolution history, which I completely understand, because we did play, and the Boston area did play like such an important role in that, of course. So it's very understandable. But yeah, we get more into like the pirate history in the area, and there's like a haunted cave, and like there's some hidden treasure, missing treasure involved in like the story. So there's some very cool elements to that like haunted cave video. And Siobhan and I are going to go to Ireland soon, and we were thinking of like maybe doing a video in Ireland, which would be cool. So yeah, there's definitely things happening with that. It's just taking me a second to get myself together to send out all of those videos. So hang in there with me. Thanks for your patience for the people who watch. There is more coming. It's just taking a second.
Absolutely. I can't say it enough. You are a star. And I think that what your journey has done with the show is really uplift that dating is not as easy as it looks, but staying to your authentic autistic self is what shows. And I'm excited to see all of the episodes with the Spirit Keepers coming up, and especially with the Pirates Cove and the Ireland trip that you and Siobhan are going to go on. I am so elated for that. Our thanks to Emma Hodgson for your amazing input on Spirits and for talking to us about your time as a fellow supporting cast member on Love on the Spectrum. It is always great to talk to people that know what it's like to go through the process, whether if it's just on for a few episodes or whether if it's just as a main cast member. I will make sure one of these days, since you guys visited LA, that we return the favor and come and visit you guys in Boston. I have not been to Boston, but I have heard so many phenomenal things about it. It is happening at some point. It is for sure happening. If you like what you heard on this episode and want to hear other episodes or stay tuned for future ones, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to this podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm Devin Morrissey, and I'll see you next time right here on Autistically Unapologetic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Autistically Unapologetic with Devin Morrissey. If you like what you hear and you want to see more, don't forget to rate and subscribe to stay tuned for future episodes. Again, thanks for listening.